That's the New York Ska Jazz Ensemble with a tune I just don't seem to get tired of. It's Take Five, made famous, as you know, by the late Dave Brubeck. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Monday, June the 17th. And today, a really wonderful opportunity to do some media literacy, and we'll be taking a look at this NSA story in black and white. I will first lay out the premise of my presentation today. The premise is that since this story broke on June the 5th in The Guardian in London, with the Washington Post, and most recently with the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong, coverage of this particular story betrays adherence to an age-old prejudice, a racial prejudice. And so we will see that a white 29-year-old hired hand with a personal history that suggests a need for psychiatric care is now made to be far more credible, far more authoritative, far more knowledgeable, far more, in fact, respected than the black president of the United States whose administration he infiltrated. Now, some of you may disagree, and I welcome this disagreement, but I'm speaking from a particular vantage point. I've been a journalist, too, for almost 40 years. And I know good journalism, and I know crappy journalism, and what we have been receiving is crappy journalism. Sure, it made a big splash, as it was designed to do. It was designed to excite. It was designed to incite. It was designed to get people very angry. But in the middle of all of that excitement, we should have some sober minds, and we should be demanding answers to certain questions, but the questions are not being asked of the person we should be asking these questions of. The questions are directed toward the administration. And by the way, if you've been listening to this program regularly, you will know that I speak not as a card-carrying member of the Barack Obama fan club. I'm not a fan. But I know crappy journalism when I see it. And this is crappy. Why? This guy comes out of the shadows. Edward Snowden. And he just drops a bunch of stuff in the lap of very gullible writers who call themselves journalists, and they print some pretty sensational things. And truly, I mean, if reading it, it's quite shocking, very disturbing. It suggests that the NSA, the National Security Agency, was basically hoarding thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of metadata, that's data of data, just a lot of stuff, a lot of information, emails and phone numbers and all kinds of things, invading the privacy of citizens and storing it with an eye toward, of course, increasing, sharply increasing the intrusion of government into the private lives of American citizens. Well, naturally, that's outrageous. Naturally, that should bother everybody. That the government, as a matter of fact, had access to the servers of the big guys, the big guns out there, Facebooks and Google and and so forth. And that there was the ability, there is, sorry, change the tense, because the indication was that this is ongoing. There is the ability to access all kinds of things about private citizens without their knowledge and certainly without their consent. The story broke in the London Guardian on June 5th and caused an international, just an upheaval. And ripple effects are still being felt on this story. And it was followed by other stories related to the business of the NSA and the overreach of the Obama administration into the lives of citizens, and also the unfettered access and suggesting that the administration is out of control in its greed for power and in the clandestine way it has been operating to amass unquestioned power and unparalleled power in terms of controlling or I should say usurping the rights, the constitutional rights, and violating the constitutional rights of citizens. The premise is shocking. The premise is just absolutely shocking. And it was calculated to evoke that sentiment, because automatically people would say, hey, you know what? Is government doing its thing again? And automatically, your switch gets flipped. You are in attack mode because this is being said. But why? And you see, this is where we now start to get to the discussion. Why do we have an automatic response like that? Why do we become automatically suspicious about the government? And in this particular instance, why do we automatically believe what is said? And we believe what is said literally because it is presented by white faces. And that's basically the first stamp of approval. Your guard is down because naturally, this guy must know more than most anybody else. And he was presented to us as a guy in the know. This was a man who was given, you know, security clearance. And he was speaking from a position of authority, and he had the humility of a martyr. And he was doing this, he said, exposing this horrific thing as a kind of public service, as a kind of civic duty to register in the name of us all our disgust for a government so thirsty for power and so callous and so absolutely disregarding the constitutional rights of American citizens. He was doing this for the good of the nation. He couldn't stand it anymore. And because he couldn't stand it anymore, he thought he would come forward and do the right thing. The right thing is to expose this awful program, to expose the government and its sinister actions and activities. He got a very sympathetic hearing at the London Guardian. The reporter who broke the story there, Glenn Greenwald, an American working there, apparently fell hook, line, and sinker for everything he said and reported it. And of course, it landed with a boom. Had everybody talking about this thing. They still are. Every day we wait to find out what's new about the story. What else are we going to learn about the story? My God, the government is becoming like those fascistic, nasty, horrible, dictatorial governments. Look at what it's doing. And people, of course, were expressing righteous anger and indignation because they were fed information from the faces that we are accustomed to trusting. We are not accustomed to trusting black faces in America, but we are accustomed to trusting white faces in America. And this white face had a very saintly look about it, a kind of meekness, a kind of humility, a kind of Zen Buddhist kind of thing going on there. But from the minute he said it, there was something there that just is not clicking. If you're so convinced that you're right, and you're doing this for the good of America, why are you running? If you are fully aware of what you're doing and the consequences that can accrue to you as a result of doing this, which people are likely to consider either unpatriotic or downright treasonous, why would you run? Why wouldn't you do like, say, Bradley Manning and stand the consequences? He takes off and he's in Hong Kong in a very shishi hotel because, after all, he was making a pretty good salary and he was able to afford a reasonable amount of comfort in his exile, his self-imposed exile. But there's one little problem with this story. And as much as the media insist that we, you know, we respond accordingly and predictably, and we get angry at Obama and his administration, and we get angry at government and its overreach, and we get angry about the diminution of our rights, and we get angry about how they're trampling on the Constitution, and we get angry about our loss of privacy, nobody is asking the essential question: is it true? Is it true? What he said, is it true? And they want answers from Obama, and they want answers from the NSA, and they want answers from all the intelligence committees, and they want answers from Congress, and they want answers from the Senate, but nobody seems to be getting answers from the central character here. Who is this guy? Where did he come from? How did he happen to have these highly secretive pieces of information? There are so many chinks in his story already. He said he was making $200,000 a year. His firm said no, he was making $122,000. That's a difference. He said he took courses at the University of Maryland. The university said they never heard of this guy. He said he graduated from some other college with computer science or something like that. No such record exists. And he says he was kind of far up on the chain. And, you know, I know people in the computer world who are seriously, seriously high up on the chain. This guy is a hired hand. For lack of a better term, he comes out of an employment placement kind of agency that specializes in tech people. That's Booz Allen Hamilton. They hired him out to the NSA. He's not an employee as such. He's a contractor. He gets a 1099. This is not a big, deep computer whiz. This is not a genius. There's a guy who knows his way around computers. Maybe enough to do the job for which he was given access to do. But he didn't do, he had no kind of access that he claims. He couldn't have had that kind of access. Not at all. He was a functionary. But he is lifted up by the Guardian and the Washington Post and the South Asia Morning Post as some kind of a genius who used his superior computer skills to get into the crevices, the deep, dark crevices of the NSA, and to ferret out this very valuable information. Well, geez. How isolated do you have to be? Governments have covert operations. Did you not know that? Every government has it. Even the Vatican. That's what people running countries, is very important to them. The NSA that they said, well, you know, started under George Bush was actually started in 1952. Where have you been for 61 years? They've been collecting information on people. In fact, the NSA says it itself. I'll read you from its declassified, a declassified document based on Freedom of Information Act case number 7319. It says, although protection of the security of U.S. communications by codes, ciphers, and other measures can be traced as far back as the War for American Independence. Do you get that? In other words, going back to the 1700s, this is standard operating procedure for many, many countries. They want to know what the enemy is up to. They want to hear it. They want to see it. They want to know. In the Civil War that was fought in the United States, it was all about spies. We talked about them here. Everybody was spying on the other person because that's what was, it was so important to know. Now, in the pristine world, that may not be a wonderful thing, but that happens to be what most governments in today's world, it's not unusual that they would have a component of their government that does that. The NSA, and again, I'm not a champion for any of this, but we have to face, I mean, look at the situation in its practical terms. The NSA has a function. If you disagreed with the NSA and its function, why would you want to work there? That's the first thing. Why would you want to work there? Nobody put a gun to your head and kidnapped you off the street and commanded that you take employment at the NSA, and before that you worked with some CIA covert thing or the other. So clearly, you're not opposed to it. Or maybe you initially were not opposed to it, and sometime recently you had an epiphany. And I am very suspicious about people having epiphanies when they are within the belly of the beast. They suddenly have epiphanies. When they do, you can bet there is something there that needs to be looked at. So he is not impressing me at all. He's not impressing me as some great, extremely capable guy at computers, because I know quite a few. And number two, he's not impressing me as a person who is in control of all of his faculties. Here's a person who wanted to be in the Green Berets and then gets disillusioned. What's the disillusionment? The Green Berets, he found out, he actually realized, do kill people. You know, again, one would assume as an adult, you want to be in the Green Berets. You should make sure that it's not about handing out lollipops to little kids. It's a military operation. That's what they do. Killing is what they do. Killing is what they do when the country says we need somebody to go kill some people. That's what they do. They call in the Green Berets and the Marines and the Air Force and the Army and the Navy. Now, if you don't want to be a Green Beret, why would you bother trying to get in? You didn't finish high school. You dropped out in your sophomore year. You never went to college, although you represented that you did. So there are questions about the veracity of this guy. This is the person whose veracity is to be questioned. And then the claims. Oh, the government is digging into the servers of all of these organizations, these internet giants, and they have unfettered access, and they're stealing the, you know, a look at your life, and they can get you at any point. They can put together all kinds of sophisticated profiles of you and blah, 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 blah. Every single one of the internet providers that he's talking about, they all to a person absolutely denied it. They've issued statements. They've said, under no circumstances does the government have any access to their servers, and if it were requested, they would never allow it. That's what they said. Now, it is quite possible that they are all lying. But I don't think so. They issued a statement saying, absolutely not. This is not the case at all. In some instances, requests were made for a very small number of phone calls, I believe, under warrant. Now, we could get into a whole discussion about the secret court that gives these secret warrants and all this other kind of stuff. But we are clear, at least on one thing. This did not begin with Barack Obama. Number two, it was not for millions and millions and billions of metadata, as they're talking about. It was not for unbridled access to anybody's servers. This is all wrong. Now, I don't mind if you're going to report a story, but have your facts straight. It's all wrong. If you disagree with me, go look up Facebook. See what their statement says. See what Google said. They all said no such thing. This guy has overstated his importance within the world of surveillance and within the world of covert operations. He is not all that he's cracked up to be. He's selling a game. And you know why? My suspicion is they were onto this guy. They were onto him. Because he did mention, as a matter of fact, in one of the interviews I heard, they mentioned that the police had already paid him a visit when he didn't show up for work. And in the blink of an eye, his house, he put it up for sale, and he just vanished into thin air. So they were on to him. He's not all that smart. He's not all that capable. He has a very deluded impression of his own importance in the world. And he has deluded others at the London Guardian, Washington Post, and elsewhere, because they're all interested in stories that win prizes. They want to break the big story, and this is a big one. And mind you, I'm looking and reading the stories and looking to see what they did to verify the authenticity of the documents that they were quoting from. And not, I didn't see any situation like that crop up in their stories. Or they called for comment. They called for reaction. And of course, got the obligatory, we have nothing to say. This is a covert operation, folks. But independently corroborating this guy's so-called facts and the authenticity of what he puts forward as information, credible information, no evidence of that, to independently ascertain the veracity and the authenticity of the information that they're printing as the big story. So because this guy was a contractor and he impressed upon people in the computer world who apparently don't, in the news world who apparently don't know how computers work, he's not working alone. He couldn't possibly have said all of those things as a person who was personally involved at all of those levels. It does not work that way. We'll find out soon who the others were and who put him up to it. In fact, let me read you something from Legal Insurrection. It's a website that has analyzed Mr. Snowden. They say, too, Snowden may have had help. Federal investigators say they aren't convinced that Snowden worked alone. A source told ABC News the FBI is not 100% focused on this one guy. Agents are not just guided by what he claims. And some in the industry are very skeptical that Snowden himself could have had access to all that has been leaked. No kidding. So he was in their sights a long time. This is not a case of some guy with some grand revelation, such earth-shattering. If it is earth-shattering, it means whoever is reporting this story has been living in a cocoon. You couldn't possibly have had a well-rounded view of the world and think that this spying on people is so brand new. It has happened to blacks. It has happened to Latinos. It has happened to Asians. It has happened to Native Americans. Consistently, well, for the case of African Americans, since the 1600s, people have been studying the black community, reporting on it, discussing it, wanting to know more about it. What's going on? Who is doing this? Who is doing that? Studying it, trying to figure out how to bump off their leaders, how to set them up for embarrassing things that would ruin their careers, how to kill them, how to poison them and make it look like an accident, as in Malcolm X's case. So we, if as a black reporter reporting on the story, the government spying on people, I would have to put it in context. I would have to remind people that the government's overreach, if that is the case I'm trying to make, this is not new. What would be new is that it would be novel that a black president would okay such overreach into the black community again. But we trust a white face. We trust the white media. And they know it. The arrogance that they have is, I will tell you your reality. I can shape your reality for you. And you will not question it. All of these questions are to be asked of the chief character, the chief player in this silly, silly story, which is falling apart as I speak to you. I will tell you this. I'm reading again from the Legal Insurrection website, and it says how the Washington Post has backtracked from its story and backtracked from its claim. And that's very significant, because what the Washington Post is beginning to understand is that it will be legally liable for the claims it makes. For example, and I'm reading here, some of the most disturbing capabilities of the surveillance program that were initially reported in the Washington Post and Guardian articles are now said to have been misleading. The Washington Post has since inconspicuously corrected some of those details, while Glenn Greenwald, who broke the story for The Guardian, has doubled down in defending his outlet's reporting. Quote, both newspapers reported that PRISM gave the NSA direct access to the servers of 9 internet giants, including Google, Facebook, Apple, and Microsoft. Those tech companies, quote, participate knowingly, unquote, in the program, the Washington Post said, which lets the NSA reach deep inside the U.S. companies' machines to extract, quote, audio, video, photographs, emails, documents, and connection logs that enable analysts to track a person's movements and contacts over time, unquote. That sounds scandalous, but, quote, it turns out the NSA PRISM story isn't quite the bombshell that everyone said it was, says Bob Seska at the Daily Banter. There are certainly reasons to be very concerned about government electronic surveillance, says Seska, but the reporting from The Guardian's Glenn Greenwald and The Washington Post have been shoddy and misleading. The first sign that something wasn't right with the story was that the tech company strongly denied that government snoops had any access to their servers. Then a funny thing happened, says Ed Bott at ZDNet, quietly, without issuing any clarification or correction. Quote, the Post revised the story, backing down from the sensational claims it made originally, unquote. Gone was the phrase, quote, participate knowingly, unquote. The phrase, quote, track a person's movements and contacts over time was changed to, quote, track foreign targets, unquote. Also erased, the claim that the NSA is, quote, tapping directly into the central servers of Silicon Valley giants. That's a problem. And that's crappy journalism. And anybody who is a journalist could get that instantly. So what is it about the story that really disturbs me? What disturbs me about the story is the intention to cause this level of havoc. And playing fast and loose, and I would say it, some people may disagree. Here's a 29-year-old guy who thinks he's on par with the President of the United States. He never would have taken that position had it been George Bush. He never would. But there's a certain level of disrespect that people show, a certain level of arrogance, because they think that a black president doesn't require that much respect. You don't have to check your facts. You don't have to be circumspect in what you do. You don't have to dot all your I's and cross all of your T's. You don't have to check, double check, and triple check what you say. You could be fast and loose with the truth. And we have now the American public believing a very clearly maladjusted 29-year-old man with his strange claims, which can't be substantiated, as opposed to the President of the United States. And again, I make it very clear, I am not a Barack Obama fan. I have been very critical of this president. I find him to be a very big disappointment, specifically for the African-American community and working people. And the poor, a word he never uses. But I'll be damned if somebody tells me this is good journalism. And I'm supposed to believe this, and you're not supposed to question it. Don't question it. To question it is to, well, you're betraying, you know, the progressive liberal front. He is cast, this shadowy figure, this figure who comes out of the shadows. You don't even know whether the man is a double agent or what. But he is cast as a righteous, moral, though conflicted person, agonizing over this monumental decision in his life. And therefore, he gets our sympathy. Everything about him suggests something is wrong. And yet, he is credible. He's made to be credible. The story is falling apart, and yet they're saying he's credible. He has been given the power through a compliant press, and they're compliant only because they're looking for notoriety for themselves. In fact, one of the reporters has already put up her, she's not even a reporter on it. She's a kind of consulting reporter, I could say then, consulting reporter on it. She's already put up her bio on you know, the Hollywood Reporter. She's available. She's available for interviews, I guess. And she's letting it known that, hey, you know, I'm associated with this great story. So if a prize should happen, I deserve part of that prize. You know, if there's recognition, I want my piece of the recognition pie. But he is given the power. And but just because he's a white guy, it's as simple as that. He is given the power of credibility over the President of the United States. This is great. This is great for study, how this works. He's not put just on par with the president. He's put even higher. He's elevated even above the president. The president, in fact, today, they issued these polls that the president is not nearly as trusted anymore. Today's poll is measuring the trust of the president, and the president has suffered some trust loss as a result of this story. But this young man, serious trust. Oh, yeah. We don't know who he is, but we trust him. They're not asking for the veracity of the documents. And I've been through the cycle many, many, many times. In the interest of breaking this story, the media says, look, you can manipulate me all you want. Just give me exclusive information and I'll do exactly what you say. And so the Guardian is defending him. They don't want to say anything more about him. Let him do this thing, but he's great and this is a righteous cause and whatnot. And they're still trying to defend crappy journalism. Now, it is automatic in situations where you have to choose, or they make it so that you have to choose who gets the credibility. In this case, does the president get it or does Mr. Snowden get it? Guess what? Mr. Snowden gets it. The black guy doesn't get it, who happens to be president. He doesn't get credibility. In the case of Tawana Brawley, young black girl saying she was sexually assaulted by white men. Who gets the credibility? The white men. In the case of the Scottsboro boys and the two women who lied on them, who gets the credibility? This happens over and over and over again. I keep telling you, there is a well-rounded view of America that people insist on not paying attention to. But if you talk to people in the African-American community, this is the truth that we know. Amadou Diallo trying to walk home versus four cops who pumped 19 of 41 bullets into his body. Who gets the credibility? The four white cops. The housemaid from Guinea, who said that the former head of the IMF sexually assaulted her. The prosecutor, none other than the prosecutor himself, said she has no credibility. We are not going forward with this case. She has no credibility. This is the prosecutor, a liberal, whose father was a liberal in the Kennedy administration, Cyrus Vance Jr., publicly pronouncing, this woman has no credibility. The white guy has credibility. But guess what? He still had to go face prostitution charges in France and in Belgium and in Washington and pimping. But the woman from Guinea has no credibility. Whenever the media decides, you know, look, I give you the Central Park case. The Central Park case. These young boys, all of them had their lives completely railroaded. And there's a dichotomy. Here was a case in the Tawana Brawley case where the woman could identify, the young 15-year-old at the time, could identify her attackers. And she did. The woman in the Central Park case was really very brutally assaulted and suffered brain damage, head injuries, very serious head injuries. She couldn't identify anybody. And they served up all these young men. And who did the public believe? Did you believe the credibility of the young man? Or you believe the credibility of the white woman who said, well, I don't know who did it. And then the prosecutor said, well, we know. We got him. Only to be found so many years later that it was all a lie. Now, did somebody suffer repercussions for that? Did any judge get kicked off the bench? Did any prosecutor get indicted for prosecutorial misconduct? Did any detectives get dismissed from the force? No. Because when the media as an institution, makes a decision. It conditions everybody as to who credibility belongs to. In this scenario here that we're dealing with this NSA story, we are being conditioned to accept automatically the credibility of Edward Snowden. We are conditioned to reject the credibility of Barack Obama and his administration. And we are being very good lemmings. We are following orders. The reporters are like journalistic gods. They think that they are the new version of Woodward and Bernstein. They have broken the story of the century. Oh, yeah, they've done great. And any competent journalist will tell you this thing smells to the high heavens. So, that's what I wanted to bring your attention to today. We're going to continue this discussion. We certainly are. We'll take your calls. We have a little bit of time still to take calls at 888-874-4888. I want this conversation to continue because this is the society that we are living in. And whether we are conscious of it or not, racism is alive and well. And they're playing games with our brains. They're playing games with our minds. And we're following. We're following in lockstep with it. So, let me hear what you're thinking. We have a little bit of time, but we will continue this discussion tomorrow. Absolutely. We will continue. I want to hear your feedback as well. You know, I already got feedback today. Let me see here. I did get one. I did see one says, I just kind of lost that. I'll have to pick it up a little bit later. But hello, you're on the air, Michael, from New Jersey.
Hi, Patrice.
Fine.
I agree with you. In some respects, I disagree. But, you know, I think there is a racial issue here. I also think there's a credibility issue. But one thing about Mr. Snowden is he unlike other people, for example, Judith Miller, this fellow has a UBS stick in his hand. And once people get that UBS stick out of his hand, then everything changes because they can make up any narrative they want. But the UBS stick is actually like a bomb that he's got strapped to his chest at the present time. And
he may have some things that may cause minor ripples and, you know, a little bit of embarrassment or something. But the embarrassment really is not in terms of what he has. The embarrassment is in terms of how does the United States, I keep asking this question, how do you, as a covert operation, you don't know who's working for you and you let people into places where they're not qualified to be. I mean, how does that happen? I asked the same question, you remember, with the Boston bombing.
Okay, but are you questioning that he may not have the information he says he has? I don't know. I'm just asking. My impression is he has this UBS, USB stick that's, you know, he recorded all this, you know, this data.
Yes,
that is the actual proof of what he's talking about now.
Sure.
You have to tear that all apart and find out what it is, but still
I agree with you. I think he has some kind of information and it may or may not be damaging, but I am saying that automatically I know that this guy is not as high up on the food chain as anyone would really think he is. He really isn't.
Right. But, you know, one way of looking at it is Mr. Snowden's not that really that important. It's that USB stick with the recording on it. Now, for example, Judith Miller was allowed to go on the front page of the New York Times day after day after day, and her source was something called Curveball. I mean, we should have known right there with a source named Curveball that You know, did we really look into whether it was actually true what she was saying? And it turned out not to be, but she drummed up a whole war and caused huge treasure and blood to be wasted.
Sure.
And is the New York Times, you know, are they responsible or were they liable? You know, they let her on the front page day after day after day.
Sure, of course. And a lot of reporters make their, as I say, make their bones that way. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who they destroy in the process. They just, you know, drop a bomb and they walk away.
Exactly.
Hello, Paul. You're on the air. Thank you, Michael. Hello, Paul.
Patrice.
Yes.
Paul DiRienzo here.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Great. It's so happy to. I'm glad to hear you on the radio again. And I'm back to not being able to ever miss you again now that I can hear you on the internet.
Thank you, Paul.
I never did miss you when you played over at that other radio station. I'm so glad you're back on the air and you have the independence, you know, to say important things and to say what you want.
Thank you.
I would like to thank the Progressive Radio Network for giving you that opportunity.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks so much.
You're saying a lot of interesting things. I've still reserved judgment on this whole Snowden thing, but it was interesting to me, Utrecht, how the first person who spoke out in his defense were the father and son team of the other Paul, the last name Paul team, Ron and they were the first ones, and you know that considering how Snowden himself said that he was a potential target of the CIA, yet you know, he's able to pretty much travel around the world and live freely in Hong Kong. You would imagine he might have some powerful friends somewhere.
Oh, well, we'll see. We'll see what goes. But I'm just telling you what my instinct tells me.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad. I know. I guess at a certain point you can't really do too much guessing. Who knows what the future is going to hold. I think there's so many actual real cases of secrecy that aren't necessarily linked to one administration or one person, but are built into the system and some of the terrible things the system has done that you were mentioning.
Absolutely.
There are real secrets, and the ones that really have damaging, because in a lot of ways the secrets that Mr. Snowden was talking about were all pretty much well known. You know, they'd already been released in different forms. I guess he's been very good at keeping it in the media, much better than other people like the blasting away at the civilians in Baghdad that was captured released by Bradley Manning. I thought that was a lot more. That told us a lot more right there. We could actually see soldiers, machine gunning civilians, and then talking about how happy they were about it.
Sure.
And also, I think I'm working on it. I think I sent you an email about it. I'm working on a story about the ongoing disaster at Hanford, Washington, where I think people don't realize that radioactive tests were conducted on the population without their knowledge, where it's the worst. It's much worse than, I think they say, underground in storage, leaking storage tanks, they have twice the radiation released at Chernobyl. 53
million
gallons.
Well, we'll talk.
Uh-huh.
But thanks, Paul, for calling. Good to hear from you. Thank you. Rose Ellen from Queens, if you can
Hi, Utrecht.
Hello.
Hi, Utrecht. My instincts tell me that this Snowden guy, it's not really about race at all. It's not about President Obama. It's really about someone who was a lot like maybe Timothy McVeigh, maybe that Nagal Hassan, someone without the violence. He doesn't have that in him. But he was politicized by the U.S. military. Up until then, he was all American. He wanted to, you know, bring democracy to the Iraqis and all that, just like that other guy, McVeigh, along those lines. Nagal Hassan, he was, even though they're saying he was some secret cell, he was born and raised here. He wanted to go in the army. He believed in it. And once in the military, they were politicized, and he was appalled at what was going on, at what he saw. And so then he decided to turn against his government based on that.
No, he wasn't there that long. He was there for supposedly a couple of months.
He made that statement, oh, all they want to do is kill Arabs. He made that statement. That was something that he saw and that he believes was the case.
Let me ask you a question. Really, What would a person expect when you are in the military?
Well, of course,
you're going into the green.
I always wonder why do these people sign up? It's not like
you're going into the green berets,
and then they're appalled. Oh, I got to kill people. Oh my God! You know, I don't understand it, but apparently it happened to him. It happened to the McVeigh, and I think it happened to Nigel Hassan. I mean, that's what. War is about, but that I think in their minds they had this view that war is it's a noble thing and it's all going to be clean and beautiful and we're going to bring democracy and they're going to come out and lead us.
I mean, that was one of the narratives
we were being given. And when he got there, he realized what was really going on, and he was politicized.
Okay, well, I'll tell you this. Thanks, Rosella.
All right, thank you. It's nice to hear you. It's nice to have you on the air again.
Thank you, Rosella. You know, the thing is that there is a huge disconnect, and anybody reading between the lines with this young man knows that there's something here that is just not right. It's just not right. Talking about, well, we will bring democracy. And you're 29 years old now, and back then you might have been, 25 or so. What is this business about you bringing democracy? You know, you personally going to bring democracy. Come on. You want to be in the Green Berets, and then you get upset because you find out that you have to be trained to kill people? And this was a surprise to you, and it causes you to be alienated, then it says something about your judgment. It says something about what do you think any part of the armed forces is about? You have to learn how to kill people, because that's what military defense is all about. That's what the military is for. Now, if you think that, as I said, if you think it's about handing out lollipops, then you have a wrong concept about the military. Now, we come to the end of our program today. You know this is going to be our discussion tomorrow, so I'm going to be prepared to get a whole bunch of blasts on this one, but it is worth discussing. And also looking at from the possibility that, you know, what happens when people get, how do media organizations, the power of media organizations to literally shape your opinion and to relieve you of your common sense? we have to discuss that tomorrow. All right. Thank you so much for your time and attention today. Again, it's important that we discuss these things as frankly as possible, and I feel privileged that I could express my opinion and that you can too. We are all grown people, and we can say things as we see them. Call it as you see it. That's the whole point. So thank you so much. We'll see each other tomorrow at the same time. But before I go, I just want to remind you that I would like you to please make that call to encourage the reunification of Haitian children with their families in the United States. Please call Congresswoman Frederica Wilson at her Washington, D.C. office at 202-225-4506. Please ask, as politely and respectfully as you can, please ask that she impress upon the president the need to expedite the Haitian family reunification period now. Don't wait. It needs to happen now. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks.